This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Battle for Malaysia on BFM 89.9.
We've got Professor James Chin on the line. He is, of course, from the Asia Institute at the University of Tasmania. James, we haven't spoken to you since polling day. Welcome back to the show.
Good afternoon.
James, very quickly, if we can jump in before we get to the main announcements. Your sense of the question of optics for this cabinet. Tun Dr. Mahathir mentioned that the numbers for a full cabinet, he says there needs to be some wiggle room for the government in order to include a representation from Sabah and Sarawak. What do you think is going to be happening on that side of the equation?
I think basically what Mahathir is waiting for is that he's waiting for the dust to settle. There are several big political events that's not settled yet. For example, he's waiting for Shafiq Abdal to take power tonight. If everything goes smoothly, Shafiq Abdal will be sworn in as the Sabah Chief Minister. And on the Sarawak side, the Sarawak Barisan Nasional will hold a big powwow this week to discuss their options. So until the political dust are settled, he really can't appoint anybody from Sabah and Sarawak. But having said that, during the campaign trial, DAP actually nominated some people from Sabah and Sarawak to be ministers if they were to win power. So, for example, the stumping MP in Kuching, Chong, he was publicly named by Lim Guan Eng to be a potential minister if Pakatan Harapan wins government.
James, one of the questions that were fielded was the question of defections, and of course we see some pushback through the media, interest groups saying the defections, especially from PBB, noting that the PBB should not be welcomed into Pakatan Harapan. What's your take on the real politic of and the inclusion of something like PBB? And I know also, I believe Baru Bien, Pakatan Sarawak head, has also mentioned the question of them needing to be in the conversation about the inclusion of a PBB?
Yes, a couple of years ago, in fact, it started from the last general election. The key decision was made, taken by the old Pakatan, that the Sabah and Sarawak Pakatan members will have full autonomy. So that's the reason why in this election, the DAP used their own symbols in Sabah and Sarawak. If they carry on with that arrangement, then they cannot admit any new people from Sabah Sarawak without consulting the local chapters of the Pakatan. So it depends on going forward. It depends on whether they'll agree to the same arrangements or they'll come to some new arrangements.
Do you think?
A lot of people think that there's only two options, which is either you keep the Sarawak Barisan Nasional out or you bring the Barisan Nasional in. That's actually not true. As many of your listeners know, when it comes to Malaysian politics, anything is possible. So you can actually go on a halfway model. Many of your listeners, the older one, will remember that Barisan Nasional is very flexible. In the late 1980s, you had an unusual situation with a party called Parti Bangsa Dayak Sarawak, which does not exist anymore. From 1987 until the early 1990s, that party was actually a member of the Federal Barisan Nasional, but at the state level, it was an opposition party. So you can have various models putting like a Barisan Plus or Pakatan Plus form of government. So there are many, many options open. I think what we need to do for Malaysia is that we are really entering uncharted territories. Mahathir really has a really a big job in front of him. He really has to stabilize the country fairly quickly. He really has to show that it is possible to build or rebuild a new Malaysia. And for that to happen, he really must build up his political capital. So I think we should all keep an open mind rather than take a dogmatic position and say we can't do this or do that. I'm not trying to say that we should admit the Sarawak Barisan Nasional, but I'm saying that given that we're heading towards uncharted territory, we should keep an open mind about what is possible and what is not possible.
Of course, I mean, James, it's a brave new world. Anything is possible, right?
Yeah.
James, a quick question about, I guess, if any defections were to happen, I mean, we're already seeing in many ways the disintegration of Barisan Nasional. Is Sarawak the last straw for that party?
No, the smart thing for the Serap Barisan Nasional to do, given the new political reality, the smart move will be for the four Barisan National parties in Serap to come together collectively as one party. If they were to do that, immediately they'll be very important, because that will constitute a bloc of 19 MPs, and also at the state level they control the state. So that would be the smart move. But you know, in Sabah and Sarawak, it doesn't work like that. It is usually decided by one or two individuals, and they have their own personal interests. So everything I suspect will be forthcoming over the next few days. Given the urgency of the situation, I doubt very much people like Mahathir will give them a lot of time to decide.
James, the question of the Malaysia Agreement 1963, the demand for state rights, the grievance that you know Sabah and Sarawak have been marginalised in the federation. Do you think that those issues could be addressed in this government? And what are the likely scenarios with regard to MA63 going forward?
It is quite clear that one of the promises made by Pakatan Harapan before the general election was that they will try to honour everything that was written down in MA63. The expectations of the people in Sabah and Sarawak is quite straightforward. Now that we've given Pakatan the mandate, we expect Pakatan to start not only implementing the promises made in MA63, they actually look into Pakatan to amend the federal constitution so it is consistent with some of the promises made. So, for example, they'll be looking at constitution amendments to make sure that Sabah and Sarawak is actually written in constitutionally that they will have control over things like their own education and local government issues.
Is there more? Is there any possibility that the push for MA for the recognition and of MA63 might get derailed? Is there any chance that in all the bluster and the noise that somehow the MA63 demands might disappear from the agenda?
No, there's no possibility of MA63 disappearing in noise. But what I can say is that the MA63 issue will not be a main priority for this government, at least for the initial period. So the best way of looking at it is that there is a period with this new Pakatan government, there's lots of goodwill, we might call it a honeymoon period, where they have to stabilize the country and they really have to stabilize the economy and bring confidence back to the Malaysian economy. That will take priority over everything else. Then once they're more settled in, then they'll deal with long-term issues. I think I have enough trust in some of the key Pakatan leaders to fulfill the requirements of MA63. The problem, if there's going to be a problem, will probably be Sabah and Sarawak themselves, because the elites on both Sabah and Sarawak are not very clear on what the MA63 is about, because there are some disagreements over the actual meaning among the elites themselves.
All right. James, before we let you go, I just wanted to get your reactions on former Prime Minister Najib Razak's announcement of him resigning as UMNO President and Barisan National Chairman.
That was widely expected. Obviously, for a leader of a one-party state like Malaysia, obviously, if you lose power, you really have to go. The only surprising thing was I actually expected an open coup d'etat. In this case, it was done quite smoothly. So basically, they follow the UMNO tradition where the number two step up. So in fact, UMNO is probably much more stable as they go through. But what is important for the Barisan Nasional now is that really, now that they're out of power after 60 years, the only way forward is that among the core component parties like UMNO, MCA, MIC, every leader, every level really have to be removed or stepped down and to be replaced by completely new people. Right now, you have the acting president and the acting deputy president, Hisham and Zahid. If these people stay for too long and they don't really step down, I suspect they won't survive the next election. For them to even stand a chance at the next state election within 12 months, at every level of the party, they need to bring in new people.
James Chin, thank you very much for your time. That was, of course, Professor James Chin. You know, Sharad, we're going to go to some music right now, but the one thing that I can't seem to get over is what an interesting moment this is, in that Lim Guan Eng and Mat Sabu met in Kamunting, you know, after Operasi Lalang. And now they're sharing a place on the same cabinet, appointed by the man who put them in Kamunting under ISA. It's a staggering moment.
Yeah, it's, you know, this has been, the word revolution is far too strong, but the momentous historic changes, I mean, it's going down, it's going to go down to the roots of this country. How things have been done in this country for 6 years is going to be overturned, and it's paradoxical that the people leading it are a mix of those with very strong credentials as street fighters, as people who have committed themselves a lifelong, I mean, people like Lim Kit Siang, it's a lifetime struggle, you know, to correct, find that the country that he wanted to make more equal has finally kind of started that process, and that part of their comrade in arms is a man that they fought bitterly against for so many decades.
Yes. We've got the Style Council coming your way now with Walls Come Tumbling Down on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.